This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Energy prices are at or near record highs, and as winter approaches, a lot of people are trying to figure out how to hold down the cost of heating their homes this winter. Some solutions are relatively cheap. You can caulk your windows, for example, or you could invest in an expensive energy-efficient furnace and wonder how long it'll be before it begins to pay for itself. So, what have you done to cut your heating costs? How much did it cost you, and how much difference did it make? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. If you work in the energy business, delivering oil, selling those energy-efficient gadgets, or if you own a business and are wondering how the increased price of oil will affect you, give us a call. Later in the program, we'll talk with Dave Barry, who announced today that he's going to put his syndicated column on indefinite hold. But first, heating your home without burning a hole in your wallet. We begin by asking how much we're going to have to pay for energy. Joining us from Chicago is Phil Flynn, Vice President and Senior Oil Analyst at Aileron Trading. And good to talk with you again, Phil.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks for having me again.
The weekly report on oil inventory was released today by the Department of Energy. What did it say?
Well, it was extremely disappointing. At a time of year where we should be building supplies for the winter season, what we have found is that heating oil supplies are at the lowest level they've ever been at this time of year going into a winter heating season. In fact, the only time heating oil inventories have been this low has been after the winter, you know, in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very much a discouraging development, and that's why we're seeing the heating oil prices once again hit all-time highs.
Yeah, I'm not an economist, but lower supplies, more demand, right?
It really is. And a lot of the reason for this lower supply situation is what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico. The Gulf of Mexico oil production, oil imports still have not recovered from that Hurricane Ivan, and it may be some time before it happens. So in the short term, this is causing kind of a panic situation in the market, and it's driving these prices a lot higher.
Mm-hmm. Now, oil is the biggest component in the energy industry. It's not the only one. Are similar price increases happening for natural gas, that sort of thing?
It really is. In fact, it was kind of scary to think that we haven't seen the first fleck of snow here in Chicago, and natural gas prices are already for January delivery above $9. That is just incredible and a record high for this early in the season. We have seen natural gas prices this high before, but that was, you know, when the snow was flying and it was below zero and very cold. This is an anticipatory rally, and it's anticipating a very tight supply scenario this winter.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what the markets are trying to tell us right now is that this winter is going to be extremely expensive, and it's going to be even more so if we get a cold winter.
And, of course, some people use electricity to heat their homes. Is electric bills, obviously, coal is a big factor there.
Well, I'll tell you, when it comes to energy, there's no place to run, no place to hide. This is a trickle-down effect across the entire complex, whether you're doing electricity, whether you're doing natural gas, heating oil. You name it, it's going to be a lot higher this year. Even coal, the traditional king coal, if you use that, that's going to be more expensive. This is a very interesting phenomenon. We've seen economic growth throughout the world. We've seen rising demand, and our ability to meet that demand has not kept up with this growth in demand. And now, because of some situations, both geopolitical and weather-related, we've put ourselves in a very, very tight supply situation. And there doesn't seem to be any quick answers.
So you expect these high prices that we're seeing now to at least stay with us?
Well, I think they're going to stay with us, but I'm hopeful that maybe, just maybe, in a couple of weeks, we can see some relief. I think that right now there's a lot of uncertainty about how bad the situation is going to get. We do know that we're losing well over 400,000 barrels of crude oil a day due to Gulf production shutdowns. We know that imports have been down, but the good news is that if we get a few weeks to catch up, if we don't get any cold weather, we might get to a level where we can moderate the concerns about shortages and tight supplies. And if that happens, we might get lucky and prices could come down. Let's just hope Mother Nature doesn't give us an early blast of cold, and then maybe we can see some relief in a couple of weeks.
Phil Flynn, thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Neil.
Phil Flynn is Vice President and Senior Oil Analyst at Aileron Trading, and he was with us from his office in Chicago. Well, we get a lot of ideas for show topics here at Talk of the Nation, publicists, listeners, even from co-workers. I bumped into one of our colleagues this week in the hall. Jonathan Kern is NPR's executive producer for training, former executive producer of All Things Considered. He mentioned the high price of oil and how it would affect him and his family. We thought, there's a show. Jonathan is with us here now in Studio 3A. Good to have you on the program.
It's good to be here, Neil.
So tell us, you told me a bunch of your concerns. What were they?
Well, I think I'm pretty typical in that I've owned a house for a while. I haven't replaced everything that could be replaced to be more fuel efficient. I've done the obvious things. I keep the thermostat down low, very low, 60 degrees at night, 65 during the day. I've done the caulking and the weather stripping and the other things. But I have an old house. It's got an old boiler. It's got, I know, a limited amount of insulation. And what I'm trying to figure out is there anything that's actually cost efficient for me? If I put more insulation in the attic, will I ever really see enough of a difference in my heating bills? And I use natural gas, by the way, not oil, to make a difference. If I replace my old 1950s era windows, which in some cases don't even have storm windows, mm-hmm. with expensive vinyl thermal windows, I could spend thousands and thousands of dollars. I can't imagine living so long that I could recoup the cost of that. So I just wondered, is there anything that actually makes sense from a financial point of view?
Well, we've got some guests on the show today to provide maybe some answers. We're hoping to hear some answers from those of you in the audience as well. What have you done to bring down the cost of heating your house? Was it worth it? Is it paying itself off? And, well, you know, what are you going to do this winter? Our number, if you'd like to join us, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from our bureau in New York is Matt Heimer, senior editor at Smart Money Magazine. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So what about Jonathan's question? Those energy-efficient measures he talked about, thermal windows, insulation, are they ever going to pay for themselves?
They actually will, and ironically, as the price of energy gets higher, the savings that you can reap by doing some of these energy-efficient measures get correspondingly larger each year, which means that some of these big investments take much less time to pay for themselves. For example, I think Jonathan mentioned insulation. The cost of getting, in a typical older house, of getting attic and wall insulation up to speed might run between $2,500 and $3,000. With oil prices there were 3 years ago, where they were 3 years ago, for example, it might have taken 5 or 6 years for that to pay for itself. Now it's more like 3 years, just because the energy costs per year are that much higher.
And what about those thermal windows?
Windows are not the best deal. If you're replacing your windows anyway, it's certainly a good move to get the energy-efficient sort of double-paned or triple-paned glass. But on the flip side, even under the best of circumstances, you're only talking about savings of a couple hundred dollars per year on an investment that might add up to $300 or $400 per window. A simpler way to do that, maybe a cheaper way, would be to buy some of these products that essentially lay a kind of layer of thin plastic film over your windows and let you sort of double-pane on the cheap.
Jonathan, what if you're planning to invite Martha Stewart over?
Yeah, they're not very pretty on the inside to have that sheet of plastic. We did that. Those of us who are old enough to have lived through the oil crisis of the 70s remember taking a lot of these steps. And at that point, as I recall, the government rewarded us for doing so. There was a tax deduction. I'm just curious if there's ever been any talk about re-implementing something like that on our tax forms so we'd get a deduction for energy-saving costs.
That's a good point, and I have to be honest, it's not something that I know about. I know there's a guest coming on later from the Alternative Energy Institute who might know where that stands.
And we'll ask about that when that happens. Anyway, let's get a listener on the line. Tom is with us from Viroqua, Wisconsin. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
That's correct.
Okay, go ahead.
Right. I think rather than generalizing about, you know, whether this or that procedure would save money on any particular house, a much wiser thing would be to have the homeowner contract with a home performance contractor or analyzer. Here in Wisconsin, New York State, and many other parts of the country, these are utility-sponsored, state-sponsored programs where a professional comes into the house using the latest technologies of blower doors, infrared scanners, furnace efficiency testers, and a variety of other tools, actually figures out where the heat is going out and where the cold is coming in, and we'll give the homeowner a specific recommendation based on how that house is actually performing. We call that a home performance testing, or home performance with Energy Star here in Wisconsin. And it really allows the homeowner to save money by not investing in things that maybe some advertising agent says is going to save them lots of money, but it's not their real problem in their house.
I assume the service is not free, Tom?
No, it's not. In Wisconsin, typically the contractors charge between $200 and $300, but the state itself then provides rewards back to the homeowner when they install the measures, so that more often than not, the homeowner gets more back after doing the work than they had to pay to have that upfront analysis. Plus, that same contractor then comes in for free afterwards, inspects the work that was done, and retests the house for any kinds of health and safety problems. The house got too tight, or the furnace is backdrafting, or moisture problems. So that the homeowner not only saves energy, but also has a healthful and safe and durable house.
Jonathan, is that something you'd consider?
Yeah, that sounds like a great. I don't know where I'd find one in the state of Virginia, but I've written it down. Home performance testing, so I'll look it up.
If you're looking in the yellow pages for somebody who does this, Tom, what would you look under?
Energy consultant, but I would actually recommend that you contact your state energy office, because most states have some sort of program on it. It goes under different names, but you know, the EPA is involved in these programs, and they're developing these all across the country.
Tom, thanks very much for the call.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate it. Let's talk now with Karen. Karen's calling from Bluffton, South Carolina. Karen?
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Karen.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about heat pumps. We had one in northern Illinois in the northern suburbs of Chicago that was actually recommended by the utility company there, and it was absolutely not efficient and ridiculous for that climate. But we now live in Bluffton, South Carolina, and have a heat pump, and it's wonderful and very efficient. So I think you have to be careful, and I think your last call was about that. Who is recommending what, and do they have an interest in your using more or less energy? And of course, the utility company would just as soon you use more energy. And we also have a sealed attic with isonine or insulation, foam insulation, and it costs a little bit more, but I think we're generating the savings. We lived here several years, and our utility bills are a lot less than our neighbors.
Karen makes an interesting point. Matt Heimer, obviously a lot of this depends where you live.
Yeah, that's certainly true, and often you won't, as a consumer, have a lot of choice when it comes to what kinds of alternatives are available to you. But I think that the point that was made by the earlier caller about getting in touch with the state energy department, that can work in your favor.
Mm-hmm. But the question really about furnaces, Jonathan, you could buy a new furnace. It would cost $5,000?
I'm guessing it would cost about $5,000. And the furnace I have, you know, my furnace was original with the house back in 1953. And when you walk into the basement, you can definitely feel it's a bit of a radiator. Not all the heat is going mm-hmm. where it's supposed to go. And I don't know if anybody's actually studied how much you gain by buying a so-called fuel-efficient furnace, whether it's worthwhile.
I actually had a couple of colleagues of mine, Chris Taylor and Noah Rothbaum at Smart Money, had crunched some numbers about that. And the older furnaces that are more than 20 years old, I think they average out somewhere around 68% energy efficiency. Newer ones come in the low to mid 90s. So that does make a difference. You're probably talking savings of $300 or $400 a year. Again, probably more given the escalation in
prices,
fuel costs
yeah.
since we did that study.
Mm-hmm. So you have to figure out $300 or $400 a year at $5,000. Well, mm-hmm. and Jonathan, the way you're talking, your furnace saw 20 some years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a little bit like saving for an IRA, where you kind of realize that you're at the point where you wish you had done these things earlier, but you
sure,
haven't.
Sure.
And you have to decide: do I plunge now, or is it too late? And I know what to do with IRAs.
Well, hold that thought, if you would. First of all, I just have to thank Karen for the phone call. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we're going to take more of your calls when we come back from a break. How are you going to heat your house this winter? How do you make your house more efficient? And is it worth it? I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about things that Jonathan Curran can do to make his house warmer and less expensive this winter with all these energy prices stepping up the way they are. If you'd like to join us, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. We're speaking with Matt Heimer, a senior editor at Smart Money Magazine. And Matt, is there a trade-off between cost and comfort?
Well, it doesn't have to be. I think if you're talking about sort of the financial comfort zone, a lot of the question involving wrestling with a cost question involves trying to decide how long do you plan to stay in the home that you're trying to tighten up. The kinds of investments that pay for themselves over, say, 5 or 10 years start to make a lot more sense if you know you'll be in that house in 15 or 20 years. On the other hand, if you're looking at a shorter time horizon, you can be confident that when you turn around and put that home on the market, some of these investments that you've made in fixing up the furnace, fixing up the windows, adding more insulation are going to make that home more attractive to a buyer.
Yes,
as far as comfort goes.
More attractive, but more attractive enough to pay for the installation.
Well, a lot of that is going to depend on the housing market in which you are making your moves. But I would say, given that a full makeover, sort of a full energy makeover of a house, we took a look at sort of a worst case scenario house that we called Dr. Evil, and figured out that a full insulation and new furnace overhaul might run to $15,000 or $20,000. I don't think it's unreasonable to expect that over a few years a house could appreciate, you know, that much in value or more, even if it even if the housing market slows down a little bit wherever it is that you might happen to live.
I don't know if you live in Dr. Evil, Jonathan, but...
I don't, but it's a sort of problematic situation, and I have a brick rambler. It doesn't have any insulation in the walls. The bricks are against cinder blocks, so you're limited as to what you can do to tighten it up. It basically means either putting insulation in the roof, changing the furnace. A lot of big-ticket expenses here that are kind of scary. I'm just curious if Matt has actually figured... Have they prioritized these things and figured out if there was one change you had to make? Is there one that tends to pay for itself or recoup the cost when you sell your house?
We think it's the insulation improvement. It's not only the quickest to pay for itself in real terms. I mean, as I mentioned, right now it's probably in the 3 to 4 year time horizon, but it is something that inspectors will notice almost immediately when they're giving a house the once over when it's time to go to sale. While how much it actually adds to the value of the house in absolute terms, again, is going to vary by market, it does seem to have just sort of the highest ratio of reward to input.
Let's go with Janet. Janet's calling from Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask your guests about wood-burning fireplaces. My neighbor and I have pretty much identical houses that were built in 1928. I have the original furnace that used to be coal, and it was converted many years ago to natural gas. And she last winter put in all new energy-efficient windows and an energy-efficient furnace, and we both keep our houses at about the same low temperature, and yet her heating bills were higher than mine. And the only thing we could figure out was that she has a wood-burning fireplace, and she uses it quite frequently.
Any ideas, Matt?
That makes a lot of sense, actually. The Energy Department took a look at what the sources of air and heat leaks were on different homes, and it actually turned out that the walls and the ceilings and the floors, which you'd think would be the main source of energy loss, only came to about 30% of the total energy that the average home loses. And fireplaces, I think, all by themselves added up to 15 or 20%. So that right there could certainly make all the difference.
So the heat goes up the chimney, in other words.
Exactly. And, whether you're using it or not, but certainly, of course, when you use it, you've got to open the damper, and there's going to be some interior heat that escapes along with the smoke. There are relatively inexpensive ways. I think kits that run in the $150 to $200 range can help you seal the edges of the fireplace damper so that when you're not using it, less air escapes. So that's something that's worth looking into for your neighbor.
Oh, that's very interesting. What about these? What about fireplace inserts? You know, I don't know what they're called, but, you know, when you have the glass doors and the vents, can you retrofit?
Oh, yes.
I'm pretty certain
that you can.
Okay.
Yes, I'm pretty certain that you can do that retrofit.
Good luck, Janet.
Sure, thanks.
We've been talking about oil, gas, and electricity, non-renewable types of energy. There are alternatives, renewable energy sources like wind, sun, and heat. And joining us now to talk about those is Max Martina, director of the Alternative Energy Institute, a nonprofit environmental organization. He joins us on the phone from his office in snowbound Truckee, California. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Neil. Pleasure to be here.
18 inches, I'm told?
That's right. And still falling, actually.
Oh, my gosh. It's coming early this year.
It is. And so the topic of energy is a very relevant one at this point.
Well, for homeowners looking for other ways to heat their houses, what are the options?
Well, there's some good news and some bad news. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but it's mostly bad. The good news is that energy is actually still very cheap. I know that may surprise many, but when you adjust for inflation, a barrel of oil compared to OPEC crisis levels would actually cost about $80.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the bad news is that we foresee this trend continuing to surface over the next several years as demand in Europe and Asia continues to increase. As far as alternative renewable energy options, there are several, but again, here the bad news is that in many cases, these technologies require a very expensive upfront cost. And so most homeowners who have existing structures are really at a loss for how to do this on a budget. It's going to be very difficult for them.
Well, some of the ideas, what, geothermal heat pumps, for example?
Absolutely. Geothermal heat pumps are something that one of your callers alluded to earlier. Geothermal heat pumps are basically a technology that's been around for, in many cases, hundreds of years. Basically, ambient ground air temperature of about 50 to 55 degrees is pulled from an underground well, and it's actually mixed with heated air, usually through electricity. Believe it or not, these systems, instead of pulling from outside air, which can range in colder climates from, say, 15 to 30 degrees, now the only obstacle is really heating air that's 50 degrees, for example. And so you can actually shave off up to 60 or 70% from your monthly heating bills.
And I guess the same thing operates in the summer. You're just heating it a little bit less to get air conditioning effect.
That's exactly right. It uses the same technology that's basic to your refrigerator. And again, these systems are very expensive to install initially, somewhere in the range of $18,000 to $20,000. But depending on local utilities, some districts, some states also offer incentives to purchase these technologies. Of course, the payback time, depending on your previous system prior to that, can be anywhere from 8 to 10 years to even 20 years.
Yeah, Jonathan, showing interest until that $18,000 to $20,000 figure was mentioned, your eyes started to roll.
Well, I'm also curious whether heat pumps are more practical in certain climates than in others.
They actually are. They're actually much more practical in extreme climates where temperatures are very hot and very cold.
Mm-hmm.
So in temperate climates, you're not going to exact the same types of cost savings that you would in, say, a very cold climate, for example, where I am, where it's snowing currently.
And there are, I assume, places where it's not appropriate to be tunneling underneath your house.
That's true, but actually, given drilling technology, much of that is actually a moot point these days. Believe it or not, if you live in a very rocky climate, that's actually better because the ambient temperature of the rocks underneath the soil is very constant, no matter where you are, essentially in the world.
Mm-hmm. Let's get a caller on the line. Jay joins us from Wichita, Kansas.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
Great subject you got.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about the design of the house. As far as energy efficiency goes, you can do a lot of savings by designing the house to incorporate some of the solar aspects of the house, the room placement, the overhangs on the windows. I built some solar houses out in San Diego that were over 70% efficient before I even added any heating and cooling systems.
As I recall, they don't have winter in San Diego.
Well, we were in Poway. It's a little colder out. The farther east you go, it gets cold pretty quick.
Uh-huh. But obviously, Max Martina, that is something you do when you're building a house in the first place.
Well, that's true, but Jay brings up a very good point, because if you look at the statistics, approximately only 10% of homes built every year are actually notably above minimum efficiency standards. So this is a really good point. I think builders are catching on to this idea, and you're seeing a big boom in the green home building market. Passive thermal solar design as well is very essential to reducing heat costs in the winter.
But is this even making sure that if there's a tree, it doesn't block the sun and that sort of thing?
It does, and it, like you say, it depends very much on the lot and on the location of your house. But in most cases, even a south-facing house will reap the benefits of sun throughout the year. And, you know, taking advantage of those passive solar benefits can be very, very beneficial for homeowners.
And when you're saying passive solar benefits, that's as opposed to putting some solar panels on the roof of your house.
That's exactly right. You're taking the waste heat from the sun that comes through a large window-facing section of your house.
Okay. Jay, by the way, thanks for the suggestion. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
And what about those active solar measures? Is that something that Jonathan could retrofit on his house? Is that going to be worth it?
He certainly could. One of the most promising technologies, which has also been around for hundreds of years in many cases, is passive thermal solar designs, and most of these are used for water heaters. Water heaters, especially those that run on electric power, are very costly to operate. The typical thermal solar water heater system mounted on your roof would cost you anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000, but again, you know, a cheap water heater at, say, any home building store would run you anywhere from $500 to $1,000. So the cost savings really won't be beneficial until you hit probably the 15 or 20-year mark.
So, Jonathan, it depends a lot on how long you're going to live in that house.
Which I suspect is going to be a while yet, but one of the things, and unfortunately we can't reorient it to take advantage of the sunlight. I always wonder why the only windows that are, we only have one or two southern-facing windows. Apparently they didn't worry about this in 1953. I also wonder about the feasibility of putting passive solar water heaters on the roof of a 50-year-old house. Is there any, are these things heavy?
They're actually the way technology is developed. They're not so heavy, and in fact, given the system, it's a very simple system. It basically simply collects the heat through a series of non-freezing pipes, so that they're safe in the winter. And depending on your roof as well, at least in the colder climates, you'd want to make sure that you have appropriate snow sheds, so that you know, the snow prevents blocking that the advantages that you can reap from that. And then the pipes are simply run through the house. So it's that the installation process is not actually very complex at all. It's more of the system and the technology and the idea that you're paying for.
Okay. Let's talk now with Michael. Michael's calling from Buffalo, New York, where you may have some experience with cold and snow.
Good afternoon. Thanks for allowing the time. I just wanted to make mention on three different areas of success that I've had in my home that was built in 1938. Over the years, I've installed pink Owens Corning insulation, and just in the last 6 months, I've taken better than 60% of it out of my crawl areas of my home, totally removed it and installed it with a product called Isonene, which had been mentioned with another woman that was talking earlier from Virginia, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an incredibly cleaner product. It looks like a product like Great Stuff. Comes out of a can. You get it at one of the Home Depot stores. Totally different. Doesn't have formaldehyde in it or anything like that. But it's a phenomenal product. Goes on cleaner. And in the last few weeks, I've been experiencing some colder weather here, and it's just performing wonderfully. I've noticed the home, of course, right in the area where we sleep, I've noticed a significant improvement in the room temperature, holding the heat, believe it or not, even this early in the stage.
Hmm.
So, and then of course, I've done all new windows in my home. About maybe 6 years ago, and I saw immediate results with the new windows, especially in that old age of a home. Immediate, what I mean is, absolutely no drafts. So the payback, I think, can result in a couple different areas. You know, when you think about the cost savings over the long haul, what it costs you overall with the total amount of money spent on the windows, that's one thing. But the instant gratification, I think, is there, especially in a colder climate area. And although it does improve the curb appeal of the home a great deal. You know, I took out windows. I'm talking 14 windows I removed totally, which had the inner wooden sashes, and also I removed the triple-track windows. So basically you had two sets of windows you were removing and putting in one window, which had thermal pane and the cleanability was there in the springtime. Whenever you want to get excited about cleaning your windows, you don't have to go up on a ladder. So I saw significant
I always argued that the dirty windows were much more efficient. that was my reasoning. Michael, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
And Max Martino, we wanted to thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome, Neil.
And good luck shoveling out.
Thanks very much.
Max Martino is director of the Alternative Energy Institute. He was with us from his office in Truckee, California. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Jonathan Kern is still with us here in Studio 3A. We're also talking with Matt Heimer, a senior editor at Smart Money magazine. And let's get another caller on the line. Ryan is joining us from Jordan, Minnesota.
Well, good afternoon. I was just calling to let you folks know how it is I heat my home and my shop. I have a pair of corn-burning stoves in my house, and I have a fuel oil furnace in my shop. But I run biodiesel through my fuel oil furnace. Saves me a tremendous amount of money every winter, especially with gas prices in Minnesota at 89 cents a therm, and I have an older home, which is pretty expensive to heat.
You said therm. Is that the old BTU?
Correct.
Okay. Matt Heimer?
Wow, I'm impressed. I have never worked with a corn-burning stove, and now I really want to see one. And I've got relatives in Minnesota, so where's your place?
there's a number of different manufacturers that sell them, and basically you have a hopper on the back side of the stove. You put in 50 pounds worth of corn, thermostat on the side, and it controls your heat. Our local news stations have run numerous stories on it. And showing how much money you can actually save per month versus going with, say, natural gas.
And when you say corn, ears of corn, or is this the old stalks and detritus, if you will?
Just the kernel.
Just the kernel. So this is all processed somehow.
Yep. I buy the corn from my local farmers, so they're very happy. They have a different avenue to sell their product. It's definitely a surplus product, and it's very clean.
Okay, Ryan, thanks very much. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Matt Heimer, I did want to mention and ask you about there are fuel assistance programs for those with low incomes. Obviously, those are going to be critical this winter. Are those still in operation, or are they fully funded?
I believe, although I'd want to double check this, but I believe they're not currently fully funded, or I should say they're not funded at the levels at which they were funded prior to, say, 1996. In the sort of ongoing battles over the federal budgets, there have been various efforts on both sides of the aisle to curtail the program. There have been, unfortunately, you know, the accusations of waste, fraud, and abuse that follow any federal program around. But the good news is that the program is still out there. It's certainly for anyone whose income is below the median, anyone whose household income is under, say, $50,000 a household. It's worth looking into.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan, any ideas? What are you going to do first?
Well, I don't think I'm going to go for the corn-burning stove just because I haven't seen a lot of corn fields in the immediate D.C. area. And the biodiesel, I'm curious about how you get biodiesel, but I also don't think that's for me. But definitely, energy consultant sounds like a great idea, and putting more insulation in and finding out about this new kind of insulation seems like it would probably pay for itself pretty quick.
And sure. By the way, if you have other suggestions or ideas for ways that people, including Jonathan, can save money on heating bills this winter, email us, TOTN@NPR.org, and we'll try to follow up on them next week. Stay with us on that subject. Matt Heimer, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Matt Heimer, senior editor for Smart Money magazine. He was with us from our bureau in New York. Jonathan Kern, an editor for training here at National Public Radio, thank you for being with us in Studio 3A. And when we get back from a short break, America just got less funny. Dave Barry's column is going away. He'll be with us. This is NPR News.